family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
It was in our news this week that New York State is considering adding mental health days for students during their academic years. Now, they would be joining 12 other states that already have mental health days in place, including right here in Connecticut. Back in 2021, we passed a law that now allows districts to give up to 2 days for mental health days, not consecutively, to students starting in kindergarten until 12th grade. But, you know, the question here is not really do we need mental health days, but what do you do with them? We want to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of. And I think it's good to give advice to adults who have young children at home to kind of give them a reference point. What should they be doing? What resources should they be reaching out to for their kids? How should they have those conversations to check in? So I thought, who better to talk to about this than Julius Dudix, our morning show counselor. Good morning, Julius. How are you?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, this is a great topic and a great discussion because too often life goes by so quickly. And before you know it, your child is 18, 19, 20 years old and ready to move out. And, you know, your kids are going to hear a lot of voices as they grow older. But yours, as a parent, yours has to be that loudest voice that really speaks to their heart and so forth. So I think, you know, you're talking about resources. And before we even get to the resources, Melissa, there's that window. I may have mentioned this in other interviews, but there's a window of opportunity. I always tell young couple with young kids, there's this window that is available for a parent to jump through to build relationship with a child. And as from zero to, let's say, 12, 13, 14, where the kids become secretive and middle school crazy years and things like that, there's this opportunity for parents to build healthy relationship with their children. And if they don't jump through that, that window closes. And before you know it, your child is older and you've tried to establish relationship, but there's not a healthy relationship. And again, no relationship is perfect. But I always say it starts with the whole intentional aspect of trying to be intentional about building relationship with the child. So on mental health days, if your child's going to take a mental health day, it should be well planned. It should be thought out. There should be some specific goals in mind and involve the child in making those goals. But Melissa, you and I both know the best thing we can do with our kids is to love them unconditionally and encourage them to talk about their feelings and to validate and to listen and then talk. I always say quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry as parents deal with kids. So it's a good topic.
Yeah, so we have a lot of avenues to dive into. Let's start with that window, okay? Let's say we have audience members right now who are in that sweet spot, 0 to 12. How do they start to have those conversations or put those practices in place to opening communication lines with their kids?
Yeah, the best thing they can do is to slow themselves down and make sure they're in a good place mentally and emotionally. Because quite often we get into a routine and a rut and the kids come home and they got their book bags and they got their books and everything is all over the place. And, you know, mom or dad has been home maybe doing some part-time work and all of a sudden you're not in a good place emotionally to deal with the wave of children coming into your house. So the first thing you have to do is just slow down and take a look at your own life and where am I emotionally? Where am I mentally? Because we said before, you can't give what you don't have in your heart. And if you're not taking care of yourself as a parent, you're not going to be able to take care of your child in a healthy way. So to start, it's all about, again, being intentional. When the kids come home, do they have a routine? When the kids come home, are you listening to what they're saying, or are they just talking and, you know, you're just kind of yes, 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 yes kind of thing? So it really starts by saying to yourself, you know, what do we want to accomplish, you know, when the kids come home? And do they have that comfortable routine, that safe routine? And do you really take time to talk with your kids? Quite often we get just so busy that we don't take that necessary time to talk and focus on what really is important with the kids.
So we're talking to professional counselor Julius Dudix about mental health days, and we were just breaking down even getting the ball rolling before they get into those really tough grades. Not to say that they won't be overwhelmed in kindergarten or first grade, but really middle and high school, I think, are some of the toughest years for kids. And especially as they're growing into themselves or trying to find who they are, you know, they've got big decisions coming up very soon, going to college, getting a job, whatever that may be. So, Julius, let's go to the second half. Let's say they are after 12. They're 13. They are in eighth grade, freshman year of high school. You've missed that window. You're listening this morning and you're like, well, bummer. I don't fall into that category. First of all, how common is it that people don't do those practices? Like, I don't want people to feel like, oh my gosh, I'm the worst parent ever. No, it's not something that's talked about enough. First of all, there are no books to tell you how to communicate with your kids. There are no books saying this is how a perfect parent acts. So tell people how common it is that these practices aren't really put into place until it's too late. That's a pretty common thing, I would think, in America.
Sure, it is. It's very normal, Melissa. The worst thing that a parent can do is just get so frustrated that they just check out and they let their child, you know, go their own way kind of thing. They don't know who they're hanging out with. There's no boundaries, expectations. But the best thing, if you've got a 12 to 18 year old, is to try to get behind their eyes and see what they see and feel what they feel. And that means the parent has to kind of slow down and look at what their child is doing and thinking and try to really, again, at that right moment, get behind their eyes and see what they see, feel what they feel, and begin to have dialogue. But when you have dialogue, you've got to listen first and talk second. And listening is a whole other realm of expertise and talk that we should really have at some point, how to listen effectively. But to your point, though, it's really about engaging your child in making them understand that, hey, you know, I love you unconditionally. You know, I may not like what you do, but I love you. And once a child hears that, accepts that, you know, I read this article. I sent you an article about affirming words. And quite often it's difficult to remember to give our kids the affirming words, especially when we get busy. We naturally focus on what needs to improve in the child because, you know, the busyness causes us to get frustrated and what are they doing wrong as opposed to what are they doing right. But it takes being intentional to be aware of the impact of positive affirming words. Like, I appreciate you. I believe in you. I love how you care about others. I'm proud of you. My life is better with you in it. You are enough just as you are. There's a whole, that article I sent you was a whole, about 20, or even, there are articles all over the internet about affirming words we give our kids. My wife gave this to me about a month ago, and she's a teacher, and I thought it was so appropriate to use affirming words with a 12 to 18-year-old, but you got to make it sincere also. You don't want to be insincere, you know, phony, plastic. You know, you want to make it sincere, encouraging words can really go so far in building relationship. So
that's so true. We hear about things like that even in marriages too, Julius, that like affirming your partner and how far that would take you. You know, it's the same sort of dynamic with your children, affirming your children. And that never really goes away. I find at 32 years old, when my parents tell me, wow, that was a great show, Melissa, I'm so proud of you. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could care less what any person, bad, good, whatever they have to say. When my parents are still proud of me at 32, it's amazing. That relationship of approval from your parents for a lot of people never really goes away. Even if you had a great relationship like I did. I've always had a good relationship with my parents, but you look for that.
Human nature is, and I've got four kids and seven grandkids. Mm-hmm. Sometimes kids will remember the negative points.
Yeah, it's
you know,
true.
That negative moment, because psychologically you need seven positives to undo one negative in your life. And the idea is that as kids get older, sometimes they do camp on that negativity. Mm-hmm. And that has to be dispelled by constant, positive, sincere, affirming words that, man, you just remember when mom and dad say, hey, you did a great job, or I'm proud of you, or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So everybody has that inner critic.
Yeah. I agree. So, Julius, help us map out a plan. If our child comes to us and says, I need a day, I need a mental health day, or you, the parent, you recognize that your child is running low and there's something going on there and you request it from the school. Help us to map out what a mental health day should look like when they take that day off.
Yeah, and when they come with that question, I'm not doing well, I need a mental health day. Is that accompanied by persistent sad thoughts that last for a week or 2 weeks? Are they withdrawing from being socially interactive with others? Are there outbursts of anger or extreme irritability? You know, those are the signs that accompany that. So make sure you're really understanding where your child is coming from. But then as far as mapping out a day, you want to involve them in that and say, hey, great, I agree with you. You know, what does that look like? What do you want to accomplish? What would you like to do that day? And I'm always a huge advocate. Any good child psychologist or social worker, they know the importance of just getting a child to relax and trust and build relationship by playing checkers or by playing Parcheesi or Trouble or whatever the game is. But get the child to relax, building blocks, get them to relax so they can talk about, you know, some of the things that really, really are on their minds. You might want to involve another child and invite them over. You might want to do something that they really enjoy, like going to McDonald's. But at McDonald's, you've got to be present. And sometimes we can do stuff with our kids, but not be with our kids. You could be in the same room with them, but not be with them, if that makes sense. So you want to spend time with them, about them, mm-hmm. and listen carefully. There's a great book out there. It's called Have You Filled a Bucket Today? And it's more for younger children, but it's by Carol McLeod. Have You Filled a Bucket Today? It is such a, I don't know if you've ever read it, but
I haven't. You said, Have You Filled a Bucket Today?
Yeah, yeah. It's a probably, when I read it for the first time, Melissa, I was in tears. It's such a powerful book.
Who's the author?
It's Carol McLeod.
McLeod. Okay, I'm going to order
McLeod.
That. Okay.
I mean, Chase would love that. And Melissa, you would love that. But there's also other books for parents. I'm a huge advocate of James Dobson. He wrote Bringing Up Girls, The Strong-Willed Child, Parenting Isn't for Cowards. Kay Shipman wrote a book called The Confidence Code for Girls. There's so many resources out there for parents. But back to your question initially, what does that look like? Involve the child, maybe play some games, find out, you know, hey, what can we do to have fun today? Mm-hmm. You know, how can we really enjoy the day together? What do you really want to do? Maybe volunteer, maybe give to others, or maybe even schedule an appointment with a therapist or a pastor or somebody who can kind of help, or a youth leader. But you want to make sure too that your child is surrounded by significant others who speak into their lives truth about themselves and about who they are and so forth, and can build them up. So that network, we always talk about a network for adults and for kids. Kids need the same kind of positive network from aunts and uncles and so forth.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. Age is just a number, but we all sort of need the same thing, just different levels of it and different ways of
communicating. You've got to be intentional. Mm-hmm. You got to be intentional about it. Mm-hmm. And you don't want time to go by before you don't, you know, 2 years go by, 4 years go by, six, and we develop patterns of treating one another. And that's where we've got to be intentional about making sure that we listen well to our kids and validate them and allow a lot of time for play and fun activity and all that kind of stuff.
Julius, you're such a gem. Thank you so much for talking to us about this morning. We have run out of time. Really quick, what is your number and your website for people if they want to learn more information or talk to you?
If they can, they can call the office at 203-243-7714. Or you can look me up on the website. It's N as in Nancy, JCC.online, NJCC.online. And you can fill out a form there and I'll get back to you and so forth. And we can make an appointment. But be it me, be it somebody else, don't stay stuck. That's our motto.
Yes, it is. Julius, I always appreciate you. Thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks for all you do, Melissa. Great job. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Melissa in the Morning talks with career strategist and workplace expert Julie Bauke. It's Julie on the Job. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
So at the start of the new year, Julie and I were sort of talking about getting into new jobs, and we started to touch on resumes. And I said, you know what, Julie, you're a career strategist. Tell me what a resume in 2023 should look like. And we decided we're going to do a two-part series starting today, talking about resume building and really the need for things like LinkedIn. So good morning, Julie. Welcome back. How are you?
Good morning. Fantastic. I'm ready to talk about, really, it's kind of the elephant in the corner of the room for a lot of people. And that is the thing that keeps a lot of people from actually going out and looking for a new job is their resume isn't up to date.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. It can be daunting to, especially if you haven't updated it for the last several years. And then we look around and say, well, you know, what is a resume supposed to have? And we get conflicting advice. It's because, you know, it's like everybody is going to have an opinion, but I'm here to tell you the things you really ought to be thinking about when it comes to both your resume and your LinkedIn profile. And yes, you need a LinkedIn profile.
So we're going to do kind of a two-part series, like I mentioned. We'll do LinkedIn in a little bit. Let's start with the resumes because I'm going to be honest, Julie, there are some people who, God bless them, they've been in the same job for maybe 30 years. They built that resume in their senior year of high school. And you know what I'm talking about? So I know for myself, I've had to do a lot of research every time I've changed jobs. And I think the resume I built in 2008 is very different than 2023. So tell us, what are the need to have categories on a resume? And when I say that, you know, there are people who will, you know, there's debate, should we put awards on there? Should we put on there our college, our degree or anything, any accolades from college? What would you be looking for on a resume? What would you suggest to your clients to make sure is on your resume?
So first of all, the old thinking of it has to be one page is gone. And unless you are, let's say, in your first 4 to 6 years out of college, you might be able to get everything that you've accomplished on one page. So for most of us, though, two pages. I have had clients, especially in academia, who did a lot of papers, did a lot of studying, who needed that third page. But in general, stick to two pages. The other thing is, make sure, and some of this stuff is going to sound so basic, but I'm telling you, Melissa, people screw it up constantly. Make sure it's readable. So no paragraphs, more than 6, maybe 8 lines at the most. So you want to think from the perspective on the person who's looking at it on their computer, on their laptop, on their phone, you know, trying to see if you have the right skills. You want to make it easy for the reader to quickly assess what your skill set is, what your experiences are. So that means big, long books or novels about everything you've ever done will simply not just put the reader to sleep, but they'll put it aside and pass it out, pass it to the next person. So readable in chunks so that my eye can follow the sections and understand what you've done in each section. Very important. And boy, oh boy, this sounds like a waste of my breath, but it isn't. Typos, typos, typos. You'd be amazed at the amount of people who have misspellings or incorrectly written sentences on their resume. So this is your best foot forward in response to a job you think you'd really like to have. And so it needs to, once it leaves your hand or leaves your email box, leaves your outbox, you have to be putting your best foot forward. So let's talk about sections. Here's the thing about resumes. Everybody's got an opinion, but I'm just, you could do a perfect resume in my eyes, show it to somebody else, and they, I don't like that. So you've got to find a structure that you feel good about. So here's my favorite one because it's so simple. The top of your resume needs to have a professional summary. Think about like an executive summary. Think about like a, here's who I am. So here's, you know, 8 to 10 lines at the maximum, with some bolding, some highlighting as appropriate, but here's who I am. In other words, if you only get, I tell people, if the hiring person is reading your resume and they only got through the top summary and the fire alarm went off and they had to leave the building, they know a thumbnail sketch of who you are. So a lot of times with clients, we do it last. because we really want to get down to the meat of their experience first and then come back to the top and say sort of like, here's what I'm going to tell you. So a summary, here's who I am. Here's my best capabilities. Here's, in a lot of cases, what we love is, and here's what I want to do next. And there's a lot of fear in people in putting that down in that they're going to lose out on opportunities. But if you're clear about what you want to do next, and that's the key to, Melissa, in a good resume, is it needs to be, think about a marketing document. Your resume needs to be a summary of what you've done and how you're qualified to do that next step in your career. And so toward that end, it's not the time to be humble. So when you talk about awards, certifications, yes, the professional summary first, then your experience, your last job, and then your previous jobs. Now, if you are 60 years old, you want to think about an inverted triangle. So your most recent, therefore most relevant experience, you want more of it, more of, than you do as you move down the resume funnel. And so your experience that you had 20 years ago is probably not as relevant as your most recent experience. So you can start to diminish the amount of information you put in. And if you're of a certain age, I sometimes recommend a section called early career, where maybe your work from the 80s to, you know, 90s or mid 90s, you simply list the jobs you had so that people looking at your resume can see the path you followed. Really important. Then after that, education. Don't worry about years. Do not put years on there unless you got a master's degree, unless you're older and you got a master's degree relatively recently, let's say in the last 8 years or so. Then your community involvement and any other relevant experience, awards, citations. I'll talk to people sometimes and they're like, okay, you look at their resume and you're like, okay, tell me more. Well, I did play Major League Baseball for 4 years. Duh, that needs to be on there because it shows your path, it shows commitment and discipline, et cetera.
So you make a really good point, Julie, because something like if you're going for a corporate job and, you know, something like, why would that matter that I played Major League Baseball? Well, all of a sudden that shows other skills that maybe you weren't thinking would still be fitting for a job that has nothing to do with swinging a bat. That's a good point.
It's also a conversation starter. People think it's cool, right or wrong. Also, let's say you spent 2 years traveling the world in a sailboat. That's fascinating. I mean, what is it about your background that others find interesting? And the problem with doing a resume, what we find is that most people do not brag. They're more likely to be too humble. And so make sure you're using powerful words. If you were in charge of a product or a project, say led, spearheaded. Don't say helped. That's such a weak word. But make sure you're being accurate. And then I would also say from a no standpoint, no personal information. Nobody cares that you've been married for 50 years and you have 12 kids and 16 grandkids. That's not relevant to your professional self. So things that show your professional skills, attributes. And I know sometimes it's really hard because on one hand I'm saying I played baseball for 4 years, but not that you've been married for 50 years. There are skills and discipline and stuff required to be a professional athlete that could apply to your job. And it's also an interesting talking point. Anything that veers into personal, religion, political beliefs, what you're doing is, and here's the biggest reason not to do it, besides it's not relevant, is that you are potentially making the employer uncomfortable because you've gone into an area where it can be illegal to discriminate against you for being of a certain religion because it just is.
If you follow a political party, and it's also, you might be a turnoff. It might be a turnoff.
Julie, so why? You know, why do that?
So Julie Bauke is here, our career strategist. We're talking about resume building, and in a minute we're going to talk about LinkedIn. You know, you were just talking, Julie, about how we tend to sort of downplay ourselves. A lot of times when people have to write skills underneath their job descriptions and like the work experience part, they'll go to the job listing. And if they match some of the things that that job is requiring, they're like, oh, let me just copy and paste it and they'll love it. What would be your suggestion to put down the best skills? I have heard that as a cheat sheet thing. I'm just saying, I'm not exposing. I'm just telling the truth.
And it's not entirely wrong. So if if you know what you're looking for and you go out and read the job descriptions and job postings of what you're applying to, then it's a great way to see what people are looking for. But the trick is, if you really don't have those skills, you're in for some trouble if you get a job saying you do have those skills. But if you do have those skills, it's actually a great idea to go out and see what language organizations are using so that you can make sure that you are using the right language and you'll show up in their searches. But you have to be authentic about it. If you say highly proficient in something and you have barely passing knowledge of it, that's going to be found out very quickly. But understanding what the market is looking for should be part of your strategy. So it's not all wrong.
Okay. All right. So, Julie, you're a big fan of LinkedIn. Tell us why.
Can I make two more points about a resume?
Sure.
Don't get fancy. Don't put pictures on it. Don't get fancy. Don't try to make it so special with all these colors and everything. You're going to confuse your listener, your reader, and they'll move on. Stick to the basics. You can show off your creative skills in other ways. Okay, go ahead.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Now, you should actually put your picture on your LinkedIn profile, though.
Oh, absolutely. And it should be a professional picture. So I want you to think about it this way, okay? If a resume will get in front of people if and only if you take action on it. In other words, you send it to someone or you send it to your network and they send it around. So a resume is you are controlling the resume and it's getting out there to the people that you choose to give it to. Think about a LinkedIn profile as your face to the market. Anybody can look at your LinkedIn profile. Mm. Maybe it's somebody who heard good things about you or kind of got your name someplace from a professional association. They want to see what your skills are. Think about it. It's a way of lurking, creeping, kind of getting in there and saying, okay, who is John Doe? What is John Doe doing? And that is, so it's passive job search. So if you're happily in your job and you have a great LinkedIn profile, what it does is it keeps you in the game. It keeps you findable. And so think about it as your Cliff Notes, Spark Notes, whatever generation you're from, summary to the world. It's your face to the world of your capabilities and your experience. And you could be happily working away at a job you like or don't like, and there will be people out there looking at your LinkedIn profile. So that's why I love it so much. It keeps you in the game all the time. So let's say, you know, you're like, I don't care about being in a game. You know, I'm happy at my job. I love my job. Then you go in Monday and they say, yeah, I think we're going to move on without you. And it happens to good people all the time. So all of a sudden, you have to get into job search mode. And so the first thing, you want to make sure that your LinkedIn profile and your resume are consistent. They're telling the same story about you. But you don't want to put everything in your LinkedIn profile that's in your resume. So think about your resume being a two-page summary of the highlights of your career. Then take it to the next level, which is LinkedIn, which is an even smaller summary. So you really have to be smart about what you include. And I think what's most important for people to realize is that a resume and a LinkedIn profile are serving as your professional marketing tools. So if you have crap on there, or you have typos, or you don't have all your great experience on there, then you are not putting your best foot forward. A well-written LinkedIn profile backed up by a more detailed resume that truly reflects who you are professionally is your best buffer against the vagaries of the market. So if you've got a resume and a LinkedIn profile up to date that really show you for who you are and really you take credit for the things you've actually done instead of taking a, well, I just did when I withhold approach, then you are findable and you are always in the game. And I don't care who you are, you need to be in the game. And let me just say that LinkedIn is generally for white collar jobs or maybe even leadership roles in blue collar type jobs. Nobody's going to go to LinkedIn to look for trades. I mean, it's just not how it's done. Now that may change someday, and I think that's an opportunity for someone. But you, someone goes on LinkedIn, a recruiter or a company HR person, and they put in search words. Like, you know, they should live in, you know, 60 miles from Danbury, Connecticut. Because we have a work in the office policy. I want them to have this, 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 and this. And then you can do searches. And if you have done your LinkedIn profile well, you will show up in the searches. And that's what you want. Put yourself in the position of saying, no, thank you, or yes, let's talk. Mm-hmm. And I am a big believer, you know, all this talk about where's corporate loyalty gone? That's a bunch of crap. There never was corporate loyalty. And by the same token, employee loyalty, you need to be loyal to yourself and your career and your family and all of that first. Then does the company meet those needs that you have? If so, then great. Operate with integrity, but don't operate with blind loyalty. And by having an up-to-date resume and LinkedIn profile, you are signaling to the market that you take your career seriously and you are always open to talk about better opportunities. And boy, that is super powerful.
It is. It absolutely is. And so, Julie, I'm thinking, I know we have next week to kind of continue the conversation. We didn't get to talk enough, I think, about LinkedIn. Like, what are some, in your professional opinion, like protocols and how often should you be checking in and what are some things you should be engaging in, friending, things like that. So maybe we continue the conversation with LinkedIn next week. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that sounds great. And okay. Also, if your listeners have any questions about resumes and LinkedIn profiles, I'd be happy to answer those as well.
Yeah, that would be great. And certainly pass them along. We could certainly talk about them on the show, or I can get you connected to Julie as well. Julie, always appreciate you. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to keep diving into this next week.
All righty. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Crime prevention expert, retired Fairfield Police Lieutenant Jim Perez with Crime on the Mind. Exclusively on Melissa in the Morning. WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Jim Perez. Happy New Year. How are you?
Good morning. Happy first 2023.
Crime on the Mind. Look at us. Back at it another year. It's really impressive, though, Jim, for real, that you have dedicated time every week to come on this show for the last 3 years. So kudos to you for signing on it. I mean, I kind of made you do it. But I appreciate you coming on another year. Thank you.
No, kudos to you for having a successful show. And, it's obviously needed. And people, are struggling out there sometimes and they need that little bump of support. And that's what we're...
Well, they love you, Jim. Let me tell you, if you went away this year, I think a lot of my listeners would just kind of leave. So thank you. I appreciate you. I really, really do. You know, this story I know is very heavy. I understand it's a very heavy story, but it is all over national news. And I think it is, it's something that I worry about. I think most people worry, whether you have a college student or you are just living at home. There are some parallels that people can really pull from the Idaho murders story. And I'm talking about the four students who were horribly murdered the end of this past year. And they have finally found someone who is in custody and they believe is the suspect. It is another student at the school who is the reason that these four students were killed in their own off-campus housing. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about this and just sort of talk about natural surveillance, because there are some red flags here, Jim. If people aren't aware, kind of catch us up to what we have learned from this case and what we can take away from it in our daily lives.
Well, the most important thing that I think that everyone's learned from this case is the fact that their stalking is real, right? And there's always someone out there who's got evil on their mind and has crime on their mind. And you may not know that. In fact, they might not even look like someone who would be a criminal. And, we're so conditioned in society. We're so conditioned to respond to apparent dangers, right? Like a hot stove. That's dangerous. We know that from a very young age, you learn that you shouldn't touch the stove. Electrical sign warnings, things like that. We are good at figuring out what danger lurks in front of us, apparent dangers, and we navigate it successfully so that we don't get ourselves in trouble, not driving too fast, not driving in slippery conditions too fast, that kind of stuff. What we're not good at, and this is where SETSET or crime prevention through environmental design comes in. What we're not good at is pinpointing and avoiding the not so apparent dangers or the subtle dangers. Here you have a guy who basically was not only stalking them, but he was able to look through an open window. I mean, not an open window. I'm sorry. A window that had no coverings, no shades, no nothing. There are many people that live this way, including people I know. And I'm constantly telling people at night, draw shades,
like, don't expose yourself. I think that's one of the things that scared me about this, Jim, is the fact that this has always been a fear of mine, and I know some other people feel the same way, when that fear of you could see me, but I can't see you. And if you feel like there's that exposure, you've talked about this. In fact, it was one of the I was in the beginning year that I had you on the show that I think I let you publicly almost say to me, are you kidding me, Melissa? You work in news and you don't have any coverings over your glass doors or over your windows. And I'm like, well, what's the big deal? He's like, you're leaving in the middle of the night. What do you mean? What's the big deal? Like, I mean, so that was something that is a big reason why we have this show, because I think even those who are very in tuned to the news and to what's going on and are hyper vigilant about protecting themselves, if you don't know, or you don't put yourself in the scenario of it's not going to be me, like, that's, I think, that's a mindset we also have to break, is it's never going to be me. But in this situation, you know, maybe college students are a little more careless, because I too was a college student. You're not thinking about these kinds of things.
No, of course not.
But the fact that this guy, if he did do what they say he did, was able to consistently watch them, was able to habitually figure out what their routines were like. I mean, it's why he was able to not be in police custody for a while, for almost 2 months. Really?
Yeah, listen, you never know when someone holds either a grudge or something against you.
Yeah.
And the problem becomes that when you become complacent and you don't really think about these things, or you're not really looking, you don't have, like, what I call situational awareness, right?
Yes.
So you're constantly living in a bubble and in La La Land, and you're sort of looking up in the sky as you're walking around. And it only goes to demonstrate the ignorance that people have. I'm not, making fun of them or anything, but it's true. Regarding personal safety, because people just think that everything's going to be okay. And the reality is that you're constantly, you should be living, and this is not paranoia. This is just simply, this becomes second nature, but you should be living as if you're being hunted every day. And you should be, and what I mean by that is that, I don't mean like in a paranoid way where you're kind of like, don't want to go anywhere. I'm just saying, like, you should take precautions every single time you get to go somewhere. Every time you step outside your home, there should be precautions in place. There should be the expectation that something bad can happen. Not that something bad will happen, but just that something bad can happen. And I think that alone would make such a huge difference in people remaining safe, because then you would follow. I mean, I live this way, as does all my colleagues and everyone else, because this is what we kind of deal with every single day. But I think the average person can do it too, if they understand that there are four guiding principles, that you should be aware of. One of them being natural surveillance. The other one is access control, making sure that people come in and out the right way on your property or anywhere else. The other one is maintenance, making sure that, you don't appear to be a weak target. Because burglars look for weaknesses. They look for you not to take care of things around your property, to let things fall apart. And then territorial reinforcement, of course, fencing and all these things. We live by these things every single day, but we don't really think about how that affects it. In the Idaho case, this is totally a lack of natural surveillance. So what they did is, because their windows were open every night, as soon as the sun goes down and you can't see outside, everyone can see. You're like a Broadway stage. You're literally lit up where you can't see the audience, but everybody can see you. And this is exactly what happens every single night. And bad guys are out there, unfortunately, driving around looking for opportunities. And when they see something like this, they automatically target it as a weak target, and they're going to go after it. And then sometimes they'll be curious. Listen, you don't have to take my word for it, because I sat with a bunch of reporters and journalists one time, and I told them about this, and half of them couldn't believe it. So a bunch of us got in a van,
And I literally, we met at night at dusk. And as the sun was coming down, we drove all over town. And we literally were standing in front of a house watching a family of four have dinner. We watched a young boy, probably 10 or 11, playing a video game while the mom was with the infant in the kitchen. And they were in disbelief. They were in shock. Mm-hmm. And all I showed them were plates that did not have coverings whatsoever on windows. And they were, you could just tell their whole story just by doing that. And to me, that's kind of creepy.
Cool. We're talking to retired Lieutenant Jim Perez of the Fairfield Police Department, Crime on the Mind this morning. And we're looking at what happened in Idaho involving four college students who were murdered in their off-campus housing complex. And they do have a student in custody this morning who is suspected of committing those murders. And the thing that we're talking about, instead of like the gruesome details of it, is the simplicity, really. If this person who is suspected of doing the killings is the person who's convicted of it and found guilty, it was pretty simple surveillance that this person is accused of doing to get away with the murders that he did. Hold on. I had to clear my throat there for a second. So, Jim, I wanted to talk to you about our everyday lives and things that we could be looking for to protect ourselves better, to make our homes less attractive, or if there's already potentially someone who is seeking us out for whatever reason, what should we be doing? What should our homes look like?
Yeah, well, before even all that, you need to prepare your mind, right? So the way the brain works, and I'm going to give you an example of this, is that you can't be safe if you're not aware of what's dangerous and what's not, right? So you can't protect against dangers you don't know about or don't see. I mean, that's pretty much obvious, right? So I want you to think about this for a second, because I want people to really get this. And everybody goes through this. This is a human phenomenon. So every single time that you decide that you now need a new vehicle, right? And we've all gone through this. You will automatically start zeroing in or focusing on those specific vehicles. Mm-hmm. Let's pick Subaru, just because I don't have a Subaru, but let's just pick Subaru.
Now you're going to see them everywhere.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So what happens is, as soon as you start zeroing in or focusing on it, all of a sudden a whole new world opens up for you, because all of a sudden you're watching Subarus everywhere. When you're on the highway, mm-hmm. when you're in parking lots, when you're, it's weird, right? But that's how it goes. So whatever car you end up settling on, all of a sudden you're familiar with all those cars. You see them everywhere. But before that, you weren't seeing it. And so it's the same thing here. So if you start having situational awareness about criminal matters or crime things that can affect you, all of a sudden a whole new world opens up and you start not only seeing these things, but you start to avoid them. So SEPTED is a combination of, psychology, sociology, architectural design, landscape design. All these disciplines are put together in order to reduce crime. And so one of the most important things, especially for the home, is you have to – burglars and bad guys look for opportunities. And when they drive by a home and they see that the garage door is open all day, they see that the bushes are overgrown, they see that there's really no care at the house – that's what's going to attract them. So if you keep all your equipment outside and you keep ladders outside, any opportunities for them to get into get clean. And that's really the bottom line. But it comes down to situational awareness. What does that mean? That means being aware at all times that something can happen. Not that something's going to happen, and it's not being paranoid. It's being smart. And what happens, and the reason why it doesn't become paranoia, is because when you start focusing on these things, it'll be automatic for you. So as you're driving down the road, just like it is for every police officer or any first responder, really, for that matter, because they all respond to dangers, but they can spot dangers and they can avoid it. And they can see it way ahead before it even comes near them, so that they can either avoid them or take aversive action. Whatever actions they have to take, they'll take. But the bottom line is, this is a lifestyle. It's something that becomes part of you. And after a while, it's so automatic that you don't even think about it. You just know. You know what I mean? And that's a great feeling.
Yeah, that's so true.
You're avoiding all the mines every time. You know what I mean? You know where they are, and you're just avoiding them. That's great. When you don't know where they are, there's an inherent fear. And you really don't know what the heck's going on. And then when something happens to you, you're in disbelief because you can't believe it happened to you. Mm-hmm. But those who are aware don't think like that, and they don't act like that when something does happen. They just know, okay, well, I got caught up where I shouldn't have been. You know, and these are the things. So keeping your home, so the bottom line is clean up after yourselves. That's what it comes down to. Don't leave things out in the open. Make sure you have motion sensing lights at night. Nowadays, you can have a camera system relatively cheap. So get yourself a Ring camera or whatever so that you can watch for your own self. But these are, listen, by having, let's say the Ring camera alone, right, or Nest or whatever brand, who cares? It's just a camera system. If you have a camera system in your home, you're always being alerted when something triggers it. That's a good thing because that's getting you into the habit of knowing that your property can be vulnerable. And let me, every time we go away, I'm constantly monitoring because when it goes off, more so than when I'm home, which is kind of strange, but because I know that something triggered it. So I look and there's a peace of mind that comes over you when you see there's nothing there. Maybe it was a flag or a wind or whatever, you know, a branch that set it off. But it's nice to know. And I think that's what I would like everybody to be at. The point where they feel confident going shopping because they know not to park next to a big box truck because it hides natural surveillance, right? Which is one of the four principles. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to walk where you're supposed to walk and not where you're not supposed to walk, where a car can hit you. You know, that's you know, access control, territorial reinforcement. You know, it's following a path. These are the things to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's so much to talk about, and it's so deep that obviously we can't cover it in this short amount of time. But I will tell you that if you do these things and you start to kind of be aware of your surroundings, tune in here Monday to get, you know, good information. I mean, I think we can build a small, you know, level of security in everyone.
I think so, too. I think that's the whole point of this. And, Jim, I always appreciate, again, that you do Crime on the Mind each and every week, exclusively here on WICC. And I look forward to more to come for 2023. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Absolutely. Have a great week.
Thanks. You too. Lieutenant Jim Perez here on WICC.